Wall Street gets a blank check while Main Street picks up the tab. Politicians raise taxes while the private sector picks up the tab. Who's fighting for business, and how do we turn things around? Welcome to the only live and local show dedicated to the private sector and turning our economy around. This is Brian Bushlack's Business Briefing on FM News 101.
It's 7 minutes past 5 o'clock. Welcome to a special post-game edition of Business Briefing following the Seahawks and Patriots from Seattle. Glad you could join us for a one-hour show here. We got a good one for you coming up in about 30 minutes. Mark Hanna joins us from Directors Mortgage. Some interesting developments in the mortgage market this past week. We'll talk to him. We will also continue our campaign to kill Oregon's death tax before it kills Oregon business. Right now, though, we head to the phone lines to bring in our friend Patrick Stone, the president and CEO of Williston Financial Group and WFG National Title. Pat, welcome back from a little vacation. First of all, we come home. You've got a jobs report in front of you, and the fact that job numbers actually in positive territory now for the first time since Obama took office. I know the report wasn't as robust as many people would want it to be, but we've got unemployment now under 7.8%. It sure makes for an interesting home stretch in the presidential election, doesn't it?
It does. That the election is fun to watch. I'm a little confused on a daily basis, but it is fun to watch. The jobs report was interesting, Brian. If you go back to the bottom, which was probably right around January of 10 or February, March of 10. Since then, we've added, 2.7 million jobs in the last 2 3/4 years, and there has been fairly steady job growth that whole period of time, but it hasn't made a meaningful impact on unemployment. I mean, unemployment was over 10%, now it's below 8%, so I guess that's a misstatement. But I think the 8% level, penetrating the 8% level was really significant, got a lot of attention, got probably too much attention from some people who probably regret spouting off the mouth about whether or not the numbers are fixed. But it is sort of a barrier that we've been trying to get under for a long time. So good to see. It is still not robust. We're still going to be painfully slow in job growth. I don't see any significant change in the acceleration of job growth. Steady, but it'll take a while.
You know, it's interesting, too. John Mitchell spoke at the Sterling Economic Breakfast on Wednesday morning in Portland. He had some interesting insight, similar to what you've had. You know, you look at this, and the recession officially ended about 3 years ago. At the same time, household income now falling to 1995 levels, fourth straight year of decline now. The average American making just over $50,000 a year. There's still a lot of lingering issues here, and I know you've preached to us. It's going to take a while to dig out of this, but it's still tough for a lot of Americans out there to feel like things are improving, isn't it?
It is. This is, and I don't mean to incite an argument among your listeners or to make this a political statement. That's not my intention. But there is a tremendous growing disparity in income in this country, which is disconcerting because, you know, from a social point of view, I think having a strong middle class has been what this country has excelled at and benefited from. And there is a large percentage of the population that has been left behind and actually had shrinking income. And if you really delve into this a little bit, it gets interesting because there is a direct correlation between, and this won't be surprising, but it isn't mentioned much, there is a direct correlation between the level of income and the level of consumer confidence. And we tend to look at this consumer confidence number as an overall number that reflects what the country's mood is. And that's not the case because you can actually break that down into ranges of income. And obviously when you get down to under 15,000, consumer confidence runs right around 51%. As you move up to 25 to 35,000, it runs about 55%. You get up to 40 to 45, it's in about 56-57%. You get up over 50,000, consumer confidence gets up around 80%. So what we have when we look at the blended numbers, an overall view and perception that consumer confidence in the country is at a certain level, but it is tied to income. And so I go back to my earlier statement, having a strong middle class and having growing overall income is absolutely essential to having a healthy economy. You can't have part of the economy average 100. I mean, Wall Street's now at 375,000. Come on. I mean, we've got to figure something out here. I don't know what the answer to it is, but getting overall income numbers up are very, very important. And if we got a second here, just to share with people in listening that the net worth is also somewhat problematic. It's gotten much better than it was. You know, currently net worth is about household net worth in the U.S. is about $62.7 trillion. Now, that's up about 22% or 22.5% from the low of $51 trillion in 2009, but it's still 7% below where it was before the downturn. So we've recovered a bit on household net worth. We still got some income disparity. The people whose incomes are high are happy and do not perceive the same level of stress or problem that the people whose incomes are low.
Pat Stone joining us on Business Briefing. Pat, you're not going to get any argument from me. I grew up in Madras, Oregon, population 2,260 back in the 1980s. I know you're a product of Williston, North Dakota, way back when, before they had all that natural gas and all that stuff going on there that's made them the fastest growing economy in the nation. You and I are from small towns. We both realize the fact that, you know, the middle class is very important, and this is not a political statement, but I agree with you that something's got to be done here to help fix the middle class, because you look at what's happened to, take the Oregon timber industry, for example, just a could be the poster child for this, has been overregulated, almost out of business, to the point where the folks, blue-collar folks in rural Oregon who rely on timber for jobs and income, they don't have a job, do they?
They don't. There's actually we can spend a couple hours on this subject, but there's some twists and turns to that particular subject. A great deal of the problem with the Oregon timber industry is an innovation called pressboard plywood.
Yeah.
And that caused a great deal of our industry to move to the southeast. We do have regulations regarding what we do with our stud lumber and so forth, and probably too much regulation. But one of the problems here, and I'm going to get even more basic with you here, Brian, I think one of the problems here is that we consistently put less and less money into education as a percentage of our budget and as a percentage of our GDP. And that's absolutely the wrong direction to go if you're going to do something about middle-class income. The world economy now that we play in doesn't allow for us to maintain certain economic endeavors indefinitely. We're in a world in a global economy, so we have to educate our workforce so that we can be competitive in the middle class. And I'm afraid we're not doing that right now, which is sort of scary.
You know, you count down to the financial cliff. That leads me right into what I'm talking about here, Pat, because even if Congress kicks the can down the road on this thing, you and I both see, you know, IMF revising their numbers. Global economy is stuttering right now. You see the price of, you know, metallurgic coal is down 50%. And people say, well, why does that matter? Well, if you look to our east and, you know, the Appalachian Mountains, you've got thousands of high-paying jobs back there that are being eliminated literally overnight. And now that we do play in a global economy, if China turns off the spigot, you got a lot of businesses here that are impacted.
Yeah, it is going to get it's dicey, and between the fiscal cliff and the international slowdown, I think the risk of a recession has gone way up. The fiscal cliff itself, I am stunned at the lack of action in Washington D.C. on the subject.
Yeah,
you look at things. You know, just for your listeners' benefit, one more time here, the way it is right now, as the law reads today. The payroll tax cut, 2001, 2003 tax cuts, and jobless benefits all expire at the end of 2012. Not all the jobless benefits, but the extended jobless benefits. All those things expire at the end of 2012. We have sequester spending cuts that affect defense and a couple other things, and a new 3.8% tax on certain passive income all take effect January of 2013. The total impact, if everything happens that's in law today, the total impact is about a 3.6% hit on GDP. well, GDP is growing at 2%. So I'm not, again, I'm not a mathematician, but I'm pretty sure that means we'd be in a recession if all that happens. So there's got to be some sort of action here, but we're stuck in an ideological tug of war that I don't think anybody can win.
I agree with you. Well, when we come back, Pat, think about this over the break. I want you to handicap the odds of a recession in 2013. I guess with what you just said, it could be a pretty high number. And we'll talk about housing. That is a positive. That and more with Patrick Stone from Williston Financial Group and WFG National Title after this break.